Paula Poundstone will be in the region 3 times over the next several weeks with her quick-thinking, unscripted approach to comedy. She certainly is well-known as a regular panelist on NPR's Screwball Weekly News quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She'll be at the Mahawi in Great Barrington for the Fairview Hospital Gala on September 16th. She'll be at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on the 13th of October and the Lake Placid Center for the Arts on the 14th of October. This comes after the release of her brand new book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. When you think of happiness, you think of Paula Poundstone. We welcome Paula Poundstone to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's very nice to have you on the program. I always love when you're here. So let's talk about what got you thinking about happiness.
Oh, I think we all think about happiness all the time. One of my thoughts on the topic was that, you know, I'm a pretty hard worker. I don't usually take a lot of breaks. And so I was thinking to myself, okay, if I did a book wherein I wrote about doing various experiments on things that I was hoping would make me happy, then maybe a publisher would pay for those experiments. That was really my number one thought.
And look, they did that.
Well, not exactly. No, they didn't. I was hoping that they would front the money.
Oh, I see.
No, that's not what happened at all.
Okay.
In fact, I think I gave them happiness when I made that suggestion because they laughed. So I figured it was a good, first of all, I could sort of scratch the itch of curiosity about these different things. And second of all, I figured that it would be a great playground for writing funny stuff. And that's my book's number one job, is to be funny. And my real question, because the book is, you know, memoir-ish anyways, which I get to continue writing memoirs because I'm not dead yet. But the real question for me wasn't whether or not I would enjoy doing a particular thing, but whether or not that particular thing would leave me with, a residual, some sort of lasting uplift when I return to my regular life. So every chapter was written as an experiment. It would have the hypothesis and the conditions and the variables and hopefully the funniest field notes ever written. But the analysis part of each chapter was the story of returning to my regular life. So it's the story of raising a house full of kids and animals and trying to pay attention to the news well enough to have to cast a halfway decent vote, and the story of being a stand-up comic and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day.
So how much happiness is there in figuring out to just come? I just want to focus in on the voting part.
I wasn't specific about this particular election. I just mean that I touched on areas outside of ourselves as well, outside of just me and my kids as well. I had thoughts and reflections on other things.
But I assume you were writing this during the campaign, so it had to have some impact.
And towards the end of the book, although I never refer by name to candidates or leaders or whatever. I never use names. I do talk at the end of the book about a certain climate that has been on the rise and that is, I think, you know, part of the there's a lot of things that I think have built up a lot of spokes in the wheel of a certain feeling of isolation and alienation that a lot of us have, not the least of which, by the way, is electronics. People isolate themselves with headphones while they walk down the street, and then they wonder why they feel alone. They spend hours and hours on Facebook looking at, you know, Facebook to me is, and I do a chapter in my book, it's called The Get Wired Experiment.
Yes. Where you upgrade your tech life.
I learned to use a computer, which I didn't know before. I came to computers later than some. We had the big kind at my house, but I did not use it. I didn't even know how to turn it on. My kids could use it, and my assistant used it. But when I did any writing, for example, I did it all by hand. I'd already written a couple of books at that point, and I wrote them by hand, and I handed them to a typist. And everybody kept saying to me, oh, you know, you really like computers. You make writing so much faster, and, you know, oh, email makes everything so much easier. So what's interesting about this chapter is because I did come to it later than some people, I actually start out a blank slate. And I, you know, for the purposes of science and humankind, I carefully record my field notes as I go through this process. I went to Apple to take lessons. And so one sees in almost real time, I suppose, this decline into some form of electronics addiction. I think everybody who uses these machines has some form, some level because they are addictive, and they are designed to be addictive. It's not a coincidence. I'll tell you one of the things I noticed as I reread the book, like when I was reading it for the audio version, one of the things I noticed is how, you know, my stress level was so increased during that chapter.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I mean, I've had a lot of stressful experiences in my life, as have we all. But, you know, computer frustration and stress is on a whole nother level. You know, when you're trying to do something on your stupid computer and you can't do it,
right?
You know, for whatever reason, it is unbelievably frustrating. And it's like, wow, this is a whole nother world. And I can't say that email has improved my life in any way. It's, you know, it's and Facebook, oh my heaven, Facebook is a 24-hour-a-day holiday letter drip. People posting their best and their happiest and their most, and, you know, look at my beautiful children. Look at them graduate from, you know, high school. Look, here we are skiing in Switzerland. Every time I see something like that on Facebook, people posting their fancy vacations, I think to myself, geez, when Thomas was expelled, we should have gone somewhere.
Do you really have 12 cats?
I have 14 now.
14 cats.
Yeah, but I'm not getting any more.
Well, okay.
Yeah,
what is the enjoyment? Now, I have a dog, and I grew up in a house where I think we had at most three cats, a raccoon, and a dog.
Wow.
Okay, so, but my question to you is, what is what is the plus of having 14 cats?
Oh, there is no plus. You know what? I will say this. I will say it's like a constant cat video. You know, and those are very popular.
Sure they are.
I mean, they are amusing. I mean, my 23-year-old daughter is living at home right now, and every time we walk through the living room, we draw, you know, Allie, come here, look at this. She'll go, Mom, come here, look at this. You know, I don't know. They always are doing sort of funny things. Unfortunately, in my cat's case, they also do territorial peeing around my house, which is enough to drive me crazy. I feel like I feel like I'm a charwoman to cats. All I do is clean. And I'm hoping, what I'm holding out for, I'm really hoping, and scientists out there, please get to work on this. I'm hoping that someone comes up with some use for cat urine. Because when that happens, I'm going to be the richest person in all the world.
Do you think, first of all, is this as many cats as you've ever had in your life at one time?
No, I had 16, and then you know, a couple of them died. But, yeah, the most we had was 16.
Wow.
Now with the, you know, in the beginning, I didn't have the problem of the territorial peeing. That's been for the last few years. It was once I brought males into the house. That really was the problem. And I don't know.
Male cats?
Yeah.
Or just males in general?
No, not just male people. Okay, no, okay. No. My son was allowed to live here. That was okay.
Okay.
They really, sometimes now, I don't know, I clean so much because of them. Occasionally now when I'm walking down the street and I see a little flyer tacked to a telephone pole that says, you know, missing cat.
Yeah.
I feel envy. I, take, take it home and show it to my cats. I go, you know, some cats run away. You ever think about that?
So what is the opposite of that? What is the impulse to say, oh, I should take this cat in?
Oh, I don't know. It was years ago I had those impulses. Those impulses, like so many, are gone now. I don't know. My daughter volunteered at the animal shelter for a long time, but I can't even blame her. It wasn't her fault. It was me. I was always, you know, I'm telling you, you know what's weird?
What?
You know how they say, like, if women spend time together, you know, best friends kind of thing, or your roommate or whatever, that your cycles,
yes,
you know, become the same?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I've lived with cats for so long, but I swear to you, in the world of cats, there is a season for mating, and there is a season where the kittens are born, and they call it kitten season. I'm telling you, during kitten season, I get tingly.
Do you really? You get tingly.
Not during cat mating season. I'm not that, but just when the kittens are born, I just feel it.
Yeah, and that's a good tingle, I assume.
Yeah, well, no, it's difficult to cope with because I'm like, I'd really like to get a kitten. And it's not good.
Now,
can't have any more kittens.
So as we wrap up here, the book is The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. It's available in the convenient book form. It's also on audio with you reading it, which is absolutely delightful.
Thank you.
Now, how would you say you are in understanding happiness at the end of this project?
I learned lots of things about happiness during this project, actually. Did I crack the nut entirely? I think one of the things that I learned is that it's not a constant. You know, if, as I say in the book, if it can be the backbeat to my, you know, to the soundtrack of my life, I'm good, you know?
Right.
But the truth is, you know, the other emotions require space and time as well. You know, you just don't want them to be the dominant ones. That's all. But there's a lot of really simple, you know, really simple answers, to at least clearing the path, at least setting the table for happiness, which is, you know, one of the things, by the way, that the computers also have been doing to us is changing people's sleep habits. You got to get good sleep.
You got to get good sleep. You've always been good at that.
Yeah, you got to get good sleep. You know, regular hours, consistent, so they say. And you got to exercise, and you have to talk to one another. And by the way, that includes community people and strangers. When you walk down the street with headphones in and you're staring at your flat thing, you are losing part of the richness of life. I think we should live like the opening scene of Beauty and the Beast. When you walk down the street, it should be, bonjour, bonjour. you know, you're supposed to connect with one another.
And with the music.
Connections are very, very strong, and you have put a lot of time into it, and other connections are shorter, you know, more in passing, but they're nonetheless valuable.
The name of the book is The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. Paula Poundstone, it's always lovely to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
It was great talking to you. Thank you.
Be well. Once again, Paula Poundstone will be at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts for the Fairview Hospital Gala on September 16th. She'll be at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on October 13th and the Lake Placid Center for the Arts on October 14th. Her new book is The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. You can find out more information about all of that at paulapoundstone.com. paulapoundstone.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.